The poet May Sarton wrote, "Now I become myself. It's taken time, many years and places. I have been dissolved and shaken, worn other people's faces, run madly as if time were there, terribly old, crying a warning, 'Hurry, you will be dead before what?' Before you reach the morning, or the end of the poem is clear, or love safe in the walled city. Now, to stand still, to be here, feel my own weight and density. The black shadow on the paper is my hand. The shadow of a word as thought shapes the shaper, falls heavy on the page, is heard, all fuses now, falls into place. From wish to action, word to silence, my work, my love, my time, my face gathered into one intense gesture of growing like a plant. As slowly as the ripening fruit, fertile, detached, and always spent, falls but does not exhaust the root, so all the poem is, can give, grows in me to become the song, made so and rooted by love. Now there is time, and time is young. Oh, in this single hour I live all of myself and do not move. I, the pursued who madly ran, stand still and stop the sun." It has been my intent to talk about creation. Literally, the act of creating as divine gift, something eternal, essential, precious, even sacred, something that can heal us and offer us joy when we indulge, and I use the word advisedly, when we indulge our capacity for creation. I was going to talk about how the process of growing into adulthood in the modern West is one that too often diminishes our capacity to create. Fred and I were talking about this, the choir director and wonderful organist, were talking about this earlier this week, and he was saying how when we're children and someone asks, "Who here can dance or draw or sing?" We all can, right? The hands go up all over the place. I can. But as we grow up, we begin to learn or believe that actually we can't. And by the time we have become adults, plenty of us cannot dance or sing or draw. I wish you could see your faces right now. We have been stunted, cut off from aspects of our nature that have been part of universal human experience, human living, human record, and religious experience since before recorded time. I'm still going to talk about that. But I'm also going to have to talk about the impact of the Bill Cosby sentencing and the Brett Kavanaugh hearing on our women, our people, our nation, and our spirit. And while these are in some ways very different topics, in the end, what I'm talking about in this month of looking at vocation and call, what I'm talking about in both instances is wholeness. That's what comes of following what calls to our deepest, truest selves. And it is what comes from acknowledging the violence we have suffered or done to others, the violence our society inflicts on people that we are taught to inflict or accept and thereby perpetuate. Wholeness is what Mae Sarton's poem is about. Her poem that addresses both areas at once. Wholeness is becoming oneself, fully, at last, our deepest, truest, best self. And the hope for us in her poem is that it comes, she says, after she has been dissolved and shaken, deferred her own selfhood to the selfhood of others, feeling always pressed and rushed, never able to stop and stand and stay and be herself, to perceive her own weight and density, the fruition and fulfillment of all she was and had to offer. But now she can. The poet is utterly present to herself and to this expression of herself, the eternal moment unspooling, the shadow of her hand on the paper as she writes, the shadow of the word as thought shapes the shaper. Her words pour out, and she sees what she knows and feels and says. She forms and is formed in the act, the same act. She forms and is formed in the same act, the same unfolding, refining, combining, becoming, being her art. Her poem is her song, and her life is her energy. The rush becomes timelessness in that state, that deeply Zen state, where we are utterly inhabiting the moment, the creating, thinking not about self, but about creation. Creation that is, of course, its own expression of the self we have left far behind in that moment of genesis that stops the sun. You with me? Okay. The great Unitarian minister, William Ellery Channing, he died in the 1840s, and he was born in Rhode Island. And his grandfather was a signer of the Declaration of Independence for Rhode Island, and he hated slavery. William Ellery Channing's father was a lawyer who defended the rights of slave traders. Channing was one of the defining voices in early American Unitarianism. His was one of the voices heard by people here when we changed from being a congregational church to being a Unitarian church so long ago. Reverend Channing had many members in his prominent Boston congregation who depended on the slave trade for their wealth, and he knew that coming out against slavery would risk his ministry and his church, but he did it. And the reason I'm talking about it this morning is that he grounded his abolitionism not in justice, in theology. He grounded his abolitionism in theology. Here's what he wrote about the foundational right that he saw as belonging to all people. To exercise, and I've adapted this for gender inclusivity. I actually don't usually do that with very old texts, but this week I did. To exercise our powers for the promotion of our own and others' happiness and virtue. This is the foundational right he's talking about. To exercise our powers for the promotion of our own and others' happiness and virtue. These are the great purposes of our existence. For these our powers were given, and to these we are bound to devote them. We are bound to make ourselves and others better and happier according to our ability. We must answer also for the waste or abuse of it. We consequently suffer an unspeakable wrong when stripped of it by others, or forbidden to employ it for the ends for which it is given, when the powers which God has given for such generous uses are impaired or destroyed by others, or the means for their action and growth are forcibly withheld. As every human being is bound to employ our faculties for our own and others' good, there is an obligation on each to leave all free for the accomplishment of this end. And whoever respects this obligation, whoever uses our own powers without invading others' powers or obstructing others' duties, has a sacred, indefeasible right to be unassailed, unobstructed, unharmed by all with whom we may be connected. Here is the grand, all-comprehending human nature right. Ultimately, that ground laid by Reverend Channing matters now as much as ever. Then he was talking about slavery. But it still applies now when we're talking about Black Lives Matter, now when we're talking about Me Too, now when we're talking about refugees and undocumented immigrants, now when we're talking about bullying and trans rights, which are, yes, justice movements, but like all justice movements, they are grounded in the needs and lives of individuals, of our neighbors, of ourselves, our trans selves, our bullied selves, our undocumented selves, our refugee selves, our Me Too selves, our Black selves, ourselves, right here in this room. And this week has brought that home again. For all that we've been talking for centuries in this country, for all that we've been talking about human rights and dignity for millennia in this world, for all that we say we are bound to employ our faculties for everyone's good, and that all people have the right to be unassailed, unobstructed, unharmed by all with whom we may be connected, for all that we agree that it is the grand, all-comprehending right of human nature, it is not so. It is not so. The creative, generative power we all have to make and be and do and contribute to the flowering of beauty and goodness is not free. Is still not free. And the joy that comes with the fullest flowering of our own capacities for beauty and goodness still eludes us. Too many of us, too often. For the timeless power of the moment Mae Sarton inhabits in the blooming of her genius, there is the person who is critiqued or disrespected or impoverished or victimized into the diminishment of all their talent and engagement, whose selfhood is circumscribed or ignored or, worst, sacrificed by another. Almost every woman I know has been sexually harassed. And when I say harassed, I do not mean just catcalls on the street. I mean followed, or threatened, or touched, or molested, or attacked, or raped. And not only women. Men too, and trans folk, but almost every woman I have ever known. And so we began the week with the sentencing of Bill Cosby, with the final acknowledgement that I Spy and Fat Albert and the Huxtables were all a facade. And even a tool for a predator. And it doesn't just hurt and make us angry, as it always hurts and makes us angry when we learn about the devastations of a predator. It also hurts because all the women, tens and tens of women who have publicly come forward over decades, all the women and all the ways they were ignored, rejected, denied, condemned, and silenced. And it hurts because it poisons and makes lies of something, someone we thought was good and true. We closed the week with Brett Kavanaugh. However we feel about the presumption of his innocence, or his unproven guilt, however we feel about the political process around the hearing on Thursday, however we feel about the statements made or not made by our nation's leaders, there was the spectacle of the woman, mild, deferential, apologetic throughout her testimony. And the man, entitled, defiant, outraged throughout his testimony. And there was his bluster and blatant partisanship and dissembling and dishonesty. How can this be? How can this be the caliber of person we're willing to give the extraordinary privilege of a lifetime on the Supreme Court of this land? What do we make of all this? Of all this, along with what we are each individually carrying these days? How do we move through this time? It is tempting to turn to something that will numb us or distract us, some form of anesthesia. And there is the idea that when we're devastated, exhausted, broken, the best way to deal is to do something for someone else, to be of service, to be of use. This morning, I have another suggestion. Give voice to yourself and make something. Manifest yourself. Lose yourself. Find yourself in the power of creation, because what pulls us out of brokenness will never be distraction. It is wholeness. As Mae Sarton said, in that single hour we live all of ourselves and do not move. There is wholeness in immersing ourselves in creation. Utterly consumed in something that effortlessly takes all our attention and care, that takes fresh paths through our brains and spirits, that offers thought that doesn't need to be forced because it is fulfillment. And when you wonder where the time went, that's when you really live. Not on Facebook, and not skating across the internet, not whipping through your to-do list that just keeps getting longer, not with chores or duties or even staying abreast of the latest outrage or struggle. Put them down. Put them all down. You can always take them up later. You know you will take them up later. So just for now, put them down. Do you believe, and I mean believe, that every single person in the world has something unutterably beautiful about them? Unutterably beautiful. I mean it. This is what making art taught me. When I was an art student in anatomy class, every week we had a nude model for an hour, every week a different model, and usually it was someone none of us knew. Every week it was somebody different, a very different body, a heavy white young woman with a skimpy ponytail low on her head, a lithe mixed-race woman with long wavy hair, a super skinny black man with high cheekbones. I saw them each for an hour one day over 30 years ago, and I remember all of them because I looked at them all more intently than I have ever looked at anyone else. I studied them to draw them, and in studying them and drawing them, I saw extraordinary beauty in each of them. The whorled curves of a perfect ear, the long, graceful line of a throat, the clean proportion of a calf, the articulate flex of a foot. It wasn't sexual, it was mortal and moving. All of us creatures, bodies, people, souls, It lifted and restored me, and rarely I captured it. A moment on the paper, with the shadow of my hand on the paper, the shadow of the ink as the shape shapes the shaper. Even now, I can look at that art and see their beauty and remember how beautiful every person is and marvel at it all over again. What we make gives us back ourselves and each other. The great choreographer Alvin Ailey used his masterpiece, Revelations, to fuse his blood memory of growing up in Texas with a celebration of African American religion and faith, and he cast a multiracial company of dancers because he was determined to both face race and transcend it. The great painter Georgia O'Keeffe said about her art, when you take a flower in your hand and really look at it, it is your world for a moment. I want to give that world to someone else. No one really sees a flower. It is so small. We haven't time, and it takes time. So I said to myself, I'll paint what I see, what the flower is to me, but I'll paint it big. And they will be surprised into taking time to look at it. The great cellist Yo-Yo Ma is traveling the world right now, playing Bach and pairing his performances with outreach to populations in need and days of action. Teachers took students, classes of black students, to see the Black Panther movie because children needed to see a vision of a place where white culture was not in charge of the exciting, remarkable environment. Award-winning writer Kwame Dawes says, I'm trying to capture in language the things that I see and feel as a way of recording their beauty and power and terror so that I can return to these things and relive them. Because in that way, I try to have some sense of control in a world of chaos. Many of the oldest stories humanity knows say that the first creator was a god or gods. Whatever we ourselves believe in, if we believe in God, if we believe in good, if we believe just that we have ourselves and each other and this flawed, riven world and this brief flicker of a moment of life, we have always known how powerful, how essential, how important it is to create. It is how we heal, and it is how we change. It is how we learn. And it is how we make new life. For God's sake, let's not forget that now. Something beautiful is waiting for you to bring it into this world. You have a sacred power for creation within you. Every one of us does. Use your power. In your song, in your dance, in your drawing, in your writing, in your music, whatever you make, whatever you can make, use your power. When you use the power of your creativity, when you create with what you create in this time of brokenness, you will make yourself and all of us a little more whole. Amen.